Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 245.
Sometimes we wonder if God actually is involved in our lives. We wonder if God is so busy doing other things that we're an afterthought. If we have ever thought this, remember, you are not alone. Most Christians think this way at some point in their lives. The errors we make in this thought are many. We forget that God is, well, God, and we're making him human. We're the ones that get busy and forget about important things, not God. We lose focus, get depressed, tired, bored, etc., not God. He has called us together as his children, and he will care for us every moment of every day for all eternity. We forget that Scripture tells us to trust completely without doubting. What happens is that we don't understand what God is doing or why he's doing it. So we decide to fill in the blanks, like some sort of theological Mad Libs. When Christian and Faithful were in Vanity Fair, Bunyan showed us the attitude the world has for Christians and Christ. Bunyan wanted us to understand that deep down, the world hates Christians, and at times, kills them. We know this from church history. We know this from certain areas of the world today. What we don't know is what kinds of effects our persecution can have upon the world, such as bringing people to repentance, encouraging other Christians, even making the lives of other Christians better. We don't understand that that is what the Lord is doing. In fact, we often don't think about it. What were the effects of Faithful and Christian's time in Vanity Fair? How does that affect Christiane and her group? And what can this teach us? We will talk about these and other questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. I'm Bob Terlo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, and actually with me, like we're back to normal or back to the old ways. Yeah. I don't know if it's normal.
I'm never normal.
But with me is Rob McKenzie, physically, in person. He's here.
Well, I heard the beast missed me.
the beast did miss you, and she gave you a beast of a welcome.
Yes, she did. She was pretty excited. The whole house was like moving off its foundation.
Just about, yeah. And her tail just about whipped your leg right out from underneath you. You
know, that's true.
You over.
Well, it's because it's not her tail that wags; it's her backside, her whole backside,
her whole body. Yeah,
she's kind of like a Lego dog. At some point, she's going to just snap apart. We have to put her back together.
We call it waggling.
Waggling.
It's a waggle.
It's good.
It's a wiggle and a yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah. Well, I was able to actually be near you today, so I thought, well, why not just actually go
record in person?
Record in person.
Yeah, we won't have any of that little static stuff coming in that Zoom brings in on us.
It definitely. I wish that we were always recording in person, but.
Yeah, I
don't want to make that hour trip every time.
Well, you know.
I know. I'm the one that moved. I know. But to my palatial estate, I mean.
Exactly. Yeah, with a moat.
With a moat.
And frogs to protect you.
It's true. I have to train the killer frogs. That's just magical frogs.
Well, I had to train the killer beast. I mean.
Did you have to train? I thought that was all natural instinct.
Well, you know, you gotta have her hone in on certain people.
So not kill your family and just kill the
and
people.
Just kill the co-host.
It's good. It's good. I'm glad to know that I can help her in her murderous training.
Yeah, that's right. So where are we at, man? What's going on? Wait. Before we get into the podcast, you're traveling this week again, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I traveled last week.
Really?
Yes.
Where did you travel? We don't have to pretend. No. Oh, in the time of the recording, you're traveling this coming week.
I haven't been there yet, but yes. But right, I would. I, I'm So Friday, I'm going to be going and will have been already at the, by the time of the recording.
No, by the time of the broadcast, the publication.
Broadcast, that's right.
Yes.
The Reform Forum Conference.
That's right.
In Austin, Texas.
So we're recording this a couple days before the conference. Rob will be there on Friday and Saturday, right?
Well, it's the conference all day Saturday.
Yeah, right.
And right, so it's a Reform Forum Conference in Austin, Texas. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
At the Pflugerville. It's a strange name for a town. For me, it sounds
Pflugerville.
Pflugerville.
It is funny. It sounds like it's something on The Simpsons.
Yeah. And it starts with a P, but it's a...
It doesn't really?
Yeah, it starts with a P and then an F.
So it's
anyhow,
Pflugerville.
Pflugerville. Yeah. which is North Austin. And Glenn Clary is the pastor there. And that's where I think it will be held. And you are attending. I am not this year. It's
I'm sure it was fun.
I'm sure it's going to be fun. You don't have to act as though you've already been there for our...
But people are listening to this and I've already been. And I'm already home.
Yes. Yes, you're right. You're right, but you don't have to act as though you have already been there because you haven't.
I don't think you understand time.
I do. I don't think you do.
I think.
So our oh goodness, Rob. That's why you say at the time of recording, at the time. See, Rob's going to look at me afterwards and say, "You cut all this," and it's not going to get cut because this is going to be part of it anyway. This is what I have to deal with.
Speaking of time.
Yes,
Christiana and her group are going to learn that time actually plays a very important role in her journey through Vanity
that
Fair.
That was not a good move in. Anyway,
that's the best I could do from wherever you took us.
I didn't take us anywhere. I wanted to let people know where you are and have been. See? Did I get it right?
See? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that a lot of people we know that also listen to Reform Forum Crisis Center.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they will have already had the same very strange conversation.
Yeah, and Proclaiming Christ as well. That's right. another great podcast. And I should say thanks to, I just noticed every now and then I go out onto Apple Podcasts and check the reviews, see who's out there saying hi. Appreciate the most recent one from September the 29th. Thanks for the review. 5-star, appreciate it. If you any get more 5-star reviews, we'd very much appreciate those as well. So come on in, give us a review and a comment. It's very encouraging, very helpful. And if we're on the wrong track, let us know that as well. But do that privately at mail@reformforum.org.
Usually our mail that we get is encouraging.
Yeah, so. It's very, very appreciative.
We appreciate that.
Yes, yes. So you said time travel. Bunyan was talking about time travel and Christiana. Tell me all about that.
Yes, that's what I was talking about. This is where Bunyan brings in the TARDIS and the doctor comes out. No, I was not saying that anything to do with time travel. But just when the Vanity Fair, when Christian and Faithful went through, has been radically changed, even though it's still not the place that Christians want to go to. But it's been changed. We're going to talk about that. That's getting ahead of ourselves. We kind of left them with Gaius and of course, Greatheart, and they had killed another giant. Mm-hmm. And brought his head back and put it on a pike, as one does. It seems like this is a daily event.
They went
guys.
From supper to slaying, right? Yes. I still like good. That sequence. Yeah, you know, that was nice, the title I used on the last publication. From supper to slaying, right? I mean, they're having this wonderful meal, conversation. Yeah. And then, you know, to me, the imagery was just like an old-fashioned, like, giant meal. Good conversation, and then off for the hunt. It was just a strange kind of like movement.
On horses with bugles and funny red hats, and hounds.
Not exactly that, but it was just interesting. You know, the sequence of that Bunyan put things into, and then a marriage. You know, at the end of it all, and we had a marriage there, and at the end of this sequence of events, there's going to be more marriages.
Yeah, and
but we keep getting ahead of ourselves. So catch us up.
Well, they go. It's funny because they're going to leave and they're gonna go, and they have several. The group keeps getting bigger. You know, they've got Mr. Honesty has joined them and Mr. Feeblemind they rescued from being literally eaten by the giant. And so they have him, and they say to him, you know, come with us, travel with us. And Mr. Feeblemind is kind of says to him, basically, look, because I am weak. Now, he'll say in body and mind, but he's just a weak person.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to hold people up. He doesn't, he thinks that if he's with them, that they're going to have to keep stopping for him. And so he kind of, they come up with this little compromise where, you know, have Greatheart that he's leading the way, and then you have Christiana and Mercy and the boys in the middle, and then Mr. Feeblemind is in the back, and you get this idea that he's there. If he has to stay back, mm-hmm. that either they might not even know that he's no longer with them, or he might just say to them, "You go on ahead, and I'm going to stay back here." And it's it gives me a really interesting when we put this analogy into the church. So often there are people that are weaker, that are people that they're the ones that need more attention because of frailty of life, whether it's physical or mental. There are people that often are depressed or just can't, you know, there are people in the church that hear theological conversations in from other groups and kind of are a little discouraged because they're not keeping up with you know, where these people are talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, they're quoting Beza and they're quoting Calvin and they're going into all these. And that's fine for that group. You know, they know what they're having a really interesting discussion. That's great. But there's some people that haven't read as much. There are people that don't have that kind of capacity that can really keep up with something like that. And that's who Feeblemind is. And he says that. Now, it's also funny that the demonstration of his faith is strong. So it's not that he's not a believer. It's not that he's not a strong believer. It's just that he's not the strongest influence in the church. He's not going to be the strong. He's not going to be the one that is going to be taking people aside and counseling them. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the one that normally is the one being counseled.
Needing counsel, yeah.
But I think it's great. Now, here's Bunyan, a pastor, and he knows the different people we have in the church. And I think it's really interesting here that he has Feeblemind saying, look, I don't want to slow you up. I don't want to be the one that holds you back. Because especially in our society today, we always know that, what are we told? That we shouldn't, we should actually acquiesce to the weakest.
Lowest common denominator.
The lowest common denominator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And which I would not have agreed with, but I think Bunyan here puts it in a way that I've never come up with before as to why that isn't the best thing. Here you have the weakest saying, I know that I'm going to hold you up, that I'm going to actually keep you from advancing in the Christian life or in because people are different. People go at their own pace. And so he willingly is saying, I'm willing to be left behind along this journey. And to me, that's fascinating. It goes against our culture.
Well, it certainly goes against our culture. And I mean, if it is the case, as you're understanding this, which very well could be, I hadn't thought through it as much as you have in this regard. I mean, it's certainly the way of our Savior. Not that our Savior was weak and feeble in the sense of his abilities or his mind, but he gave up of himself for the sake of others, right? And so in that sense, Feeblemind, who is a Christian, is saying, you know, go ahead, I'm okay. I'll give up my companionship with you so that for your sake, so that you can continue on. Don't stay with me, so that you can continue on in the Christian faith and be strong and be mature and grow. It's okay. So in a sense, if that's the case, there is a Christ-likeness to it. Mm-hmm. And not saying, hey, wait a minute, come back here, carry me, you know, doing all that. I mean, he does need those things, and he recognizes he needs those things, and he has those things done to him, right? right? And the previous section that we, when we talked, it was I need help. I need help. You know, he was getting help all sorts of ways.
Right, right. And what, right, he would say that his whole journey
right.
has been people who have helped him.
Right. And it's as though he's saying, now you've helped me as far as I think you should help me. Mm-hmm. Continue on your way as far as you need to go. Don't worry about me. Mm-hmm. I'll keep going. And someone right. else will help me along the way
right.
when needed.
Right.
But so it, there's a giving up of himself in that regard. There's a recognition of his own weakness, obviously. You've already said that. But there is an actual spiritual quality to that. We could say, if as you said,
there's a humility to
yeah,
this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and Greatheart and Christiana, they're, and that group, they're not saying, oh, yeah, whew, thanks. We were so worried. We did not want to have to, you know, carry. Mm-hmm. No, they're saying, no, you come with us. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said they kind of come up with this compromise that he's at the back. And it really makes me think that if he falls behind, he falls behind. He might not even tell them that he has been left. Now, in a little bit, he's going to get a companion to kind of go with him. And that's Mr. Ready to Halt. Who?
What a name!
I know. Who's on crutches?
He's ready to halt.
He's ready to halt. He's on crutches. So he is now. Again, here's somebody who obviously has some limitations, but he and Feeble Mind are. They will get to the Celestial City. They will get there if they have to crawl. They will get there if they're going inch by inch, lying on the ground, mm-hmm. because they have faith, and their faith is actually kind of strong. They're weak in mind, weak in body, and yet they've got this, I don't know if it's a childlike faith. I would say
it certainly is. Yeah. That's how I would describe it. I mean, they have to have a strong faith to persevere on, right? I mean, through their physical weaknesses to press on instead of just giving up. I mean, the picture is a pilgrimage that we're given. That's the whole storyline, right? And if you have troubles and you have thing or obstacles or challenges, a hill difficulty, or a, you know, a giant that gets in your way, that's the challenge. They're all physical and outside of you. But if you have your own body is weak, then you have to press on through your own body, which has its own trial in it, to continue to press on and to continue to move forward. You know, the temptations that people have that do have physical and or mental or emotional weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, we know that to end their own life,
yeah.
right? And not press on, not to persevere, to just give up on life, on the Christian community, on the church, to turn to some sort of substance abuse in order to make the pain go away of whatever they might be feeling. So there are so many things that we can be turned to because of physical ailments or impairments, or as it's called here, feeble-mindedness in the character Feeble Mind, whose whole physical body is just a weak body. So for him to just press on as he is, I think Bunyan is brilliantly communicating a childlike faith of this particular character. Mm-hmm. I do think that's what's going on with him.
Yeah, he ends up talking about a companion that he had with him, this Mr. Feebleman, a Mr. Not Right. And this is a pilgrim that was going with Mr. Feebleman on the journey. And when the giant attacked them, Mr. Not Right was faster physically. Remember, Mr. Feebleman has also said that he has some feebleness in his own physical structure.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Not Right gets away, and Mr. Feeble Mind is taken to, again, you know, they come upon him when he's about to be eaten. Mm-hmm. But he always said, I knew somebody was going to come because I didn't go with this giant willingly. He took me. And so I knew the king would send somebody. So he escapes. But Mr. Not Right was actually killed on the highway by a lightning bolt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of.
And he just says, well, isn't it interesting how I was taken by the giant? And it just, you know, again, here's Bunyan showing us that we don't know the circumstances that what they're going to lead to. We might have something that comes into our life that is tragic, him being taken by the giant. That's not a good thing. That's tragic. But then he's rescued. And not only is he rescued, but he's brought to a good place with good people to continue the journey with these good people.
Yeah. And the way, I mean, the very, there's one line summary of the whole event there. And that, and Feeble Mind gives it as, it seems he, that is Mr. Not Right, it seems he escaped from the giant.
Yeah.
He escaped to die, and I was took to live.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, so contradictory in the way that we think of things, right? I was humbled in order to be exalted. Another is exalted in order to be humbled in the end, right? I mean, that is the Christian life. That is the Christian teaching of Jesus. The Christian teaching of Jesus, that's not the best way to put it. That is Christ's teaching, right? And we don't see that very often. We don't recognize it for what it is very often in our Western world. We don't see the small things as being great. We tend to look at the big things as being, that's awesome, and it's not. It's going to be humbled one day.
Yeah, I mean, it teaches us that, you know, God is in control. He's the one that has determined all things, and we don't understand it. Especially when we're in the middle of something tragic. Or something that is just long, you know, we're long suffering through something. In the middle of it, it's like, you know, how in the world can this be good for me? How can I, you know, this is why, you know, in my opening, it was kind of like, has God forgotten about me? You know, we have people in the Psalms that ask this. And, you know, this is Elijah up on the mountain saying, am I the only one left? You know, and what does God do? No, there's thousands who have not bowed the knee to Baal. But Elijah didn't know them. All he knew was that the queen was trying to kill him. And here's Mr. Ready to, or not Ready, Mr. Feeble Mind, in the clutches of a giant, thinking, God's going to save me. He's going to get me out of the situation. And then he does. It should help us when we think of when we're going through long suffering trials.
Yeah. And Feeble ends up being with Great Heart again and Honest, and they you know, just continue their conversations. They continue the letting us know what's going on. So we have how many do we have going on in this pilgrimage now? What's the band of brethren we have going on here? We have Christiana and Mercy and the kids, right?
That's six.
And we have Great Heart. We have
Mr. Honesty,
and now Feeble.
Right, Feeble Mind.
And
Ready to Halt.
And Mr. Crutches.
To join him. Yeah, Ready to Halt.
Well, we've already mentioned him. And Ready to Halt. That's it at the moment, right? I'm just trying to get straight here.
Yeah. There might be one more person in there, but... Yeah.
Oh, wait, we had a marriage. So we.
Yeah. Matthew's wife.
No, Matthew married Mercy.
Oh, Matthew married. That's right.
No,
Matthew,
James married Phoebe.
James married Phoebe. Okay.
Right. So Phoebe should be along the way.
Well, yeah. Of course she is.
Right. So James and Phoebe, but Gaius stayed back at his place. Right. Okay. So Gaius is not with him anymore. Okay. Right. Okay.
So, yeah. And so the party is growing. It again, you know, the first part. You have Christian, and he finds companions. One's killed, you know, and then he gets another companion. But it's usually just one companion. There's other people that join up with them, but often these people aren't. They're more examples of either false pilgrims or weak pilgrims that they're only with for a little bit. But this is going to be a band of people that continue on to the Celestial City. They're coming. Oh, one last thing about Feeble Mind and Ready to Halt. When they're about to go on their journey, Ready to Halt says, because Feeble Mind comes like, oh, now here's somebody that has issues like me, and we're going to go on together. And Ready to Halt says, here, I'll even give you one of my crutches. You can have. And Feeble Mind says, no, I'm good. I don't need that. And it's just an interesting. It's kind of a tender moment of. You know, Christians who are now, they have things in common, and the one that is the weakest of the group for a journey is willing to give up something to his fellow Christian.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but and I'm glad you don't have a crutch. Because he says, Feeble says, he's like, you know, I don't think I need it, but I might need it on occasion to help me against a dog. Oh. So he's going to use a crutch maybe to, you know,
to fend off the beast.
Fend off the beast. Yeah.
I don't know. I've tried that. She just
eats
grabbed
it. Yeah. Yeah, she eats it right up. Yeah.
It was snapped it in two and looked at me and laughed. And I was like,
yeah, I think sometimes she has splinters in her dog bowl from that stuff. She just eats those things right up.
Yeah. Well, and my crutch was metallic. So, I mean, I'm just going to say,
just bent it right up.
So they're back on their journey. But where they're going, actually, they are on their way to Vanity Fair. And they end up, you know, they're thinking about Vanity Fair and everything that happened to Christian Faithful, especially Faithful since he was killed. And there's some trepidation that's coming in. There's some fear, maybe, mm-hmm. to have to go through there. And now they have Greatheart, who we know and will say that he has led many pilgrims through Vanity Fair. But he says, well, you know what? I know somebody that lives there. Mm-hmm. Let's go to his house. So even he is, okay, well, I don't want to take this group through Vanity Fair right away. Let's, you know, they've just spent at least a month, I think it was Gaius's house. So it's not like they need a rest. And they haven't gone very far, and yet they go to another home. And it's just the wisdom that Greatheart has that he's saying, before we go through this very dangerous place, we need to get away the land. We need to prepare ourselves. And so they go to someone else's house.
Yeah, they end up at Mr. Nason's house. It's M-N-A-S-O-N. It's a different name, but it's a name that comes to us from Acts, actually. Mm-hmm. And in Acts, it's Nason the Cyprian. Okay. And here it's similar name. It's Nason... forgetting it offhand, it's like Cyprus or something like, oh, Cyprusian, Cyprusian, Cyprusian. I didn't know that was a word. Nason the Cyprusian. And he says, we're told, I think he lives in the outskirts. Is that what you said?
Right.
That's what it's on the outskirts. And that's where they go to, as you said, get a lay of the land, and find a way sort of through, get a sense of what's going on in town. And they learn that things have changed a little bit there. There are other Christians in town that live in town. They eventually learn this. And that while it's not safe to just sort of like openly be a Christian, I'm guessing. I was a little confused in the reading here, but yeah. you correct me where I'm wrong. But they were ashamed of what happened to Faithful. Or at least the blood in the ground. Right. That's the language. The blood that remained in the ground kind of just gave a halt to some of the killings or some of the martyrdoms that they were doing.
The public killing of Faithful was so violent, and they burned him at the stake.
Right,
they burned him right then, and the trial was so contrived that it actually has made the people ashamed of what happened, but more just where they've gotten to the point that it was so vicious, so violent, mm-hmm. so obviously unjust that they're not going to do that again. Now, that doesn't mean they still don't hate Christians. They still don't hate Christ. It just means that now when Christians are coming through, because the road goes through Vanity Fair, mm-hmm. you have to go through, but there's this, you know, where they're not harassed. They just want them to go through. They don't, you know, because of Faithful. And it just shows you that you wonder, look what the horrible thing that happened to Faithful. That was awful. That's an awful way to die. That's an awful event. And yet it allows all these other Christians now since his death to go through Vanity Fair with very little harassment.
Sure, sure. And that's what you were saying about you never know what happens, how right. the Lord will use what we see as tragic and you know, earthly speaking, you know, because it's painful, it's wrong, it's unjust. But the Lord uses that which was meant for evil for good.
Right.
And, you know, it was absence from the body, but he became present with the Lord in that sense, in the story, of course. But it also paved the way, so to speak, for other Christians to make the way in the pilgrimage better, or at least with less challenge.
Right. I think that the mob mentality violence that was summed up by Mr. Cruelty, who was one of the jurors, where he says of Faithful that hanging him is too good for him. You know, and it's like, man, you know, that just shows you how they there's a bloodlust. And right now, programs can go through without that kind of harassment. No pilgrim has been killed since then. And there also seems to be this underground church within Vanity that I think some of that was there before Christian Faithful went through. But also we know that Christian Faithful, because they're locked in those cages for months, it seems. And there are public spectacles, which is part of, again, what led to the mob mentality, what led to the bloodlust, and what probably has also some of the underlying shame of the people. That they can't believe that they went so far. Now, they still hate Christians, but they realize that, man, we went too far.
Right. It's not to the point where you have mass conversions now because of what happened, but you do have that.
There were some. We know that because of the ministry of Faithful and Christian, when they were in the cages, we know that there were people that were converted. And Hopeful is one of them who ends up joining Christian when he leaves. And Hopeful actually says to Christian that there were others that were, and they'll come soon. So we know that there's the church was being built. The kingdom itself was being advanced within Vanity Fair, even while the Christians were in cages, even to the point of one being burned at the stake. God is building his kingdom, and he's doing that sometimes in ways that we can see, by allowing violence to happen to his people.
Excuse me. And I think the Lord has blessed us in many ways as Christians in the West with safety and a lack of persecution and suffering to be able to bring the gospel far and wide, really. And that is a great mercy. For the church, but it can also lull us into a sense of complacency at times about our own Christian life and such. But one thing that we also learn from stories like this, and even Bunyan's own lifetime and church history, is that so often, as the text of Scripture says, it's through tribulations that you will see the kingdom of heaven. Meaning that there is an expectation of some sort for trials and tribulations in this life. But we also see that sometimes those are very extreme, and in that extreme nature of persecution and suffering, reviling, all forms of evil falsely uttered against people, as Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, that God uses these things to actually build a very vibrant church. Where there is a great deal of suffering, there tends to be a church that has been invigorated. We see this in churches in Asia, a very, very large church, an underground movement, and there's been a lot of suppression from the government and a lot of hostility. And you know, of course, it can be squelched in a variety of different ways, and it has been in different places. But the church never dies in the fullest sense of no witness on this earth. And you know, I think to a certain extent, Bunyan's trying to get at that with the story here of one dying and then a small vibrant church growing in the midst of Vanity Fair, right? The one of the most, you know, it's like a church growing up in Corinth, right? I mean, it's like a church growing up in at the time of Cold War in Moscow, or you know, or parts of it's very parts of the world where right. where it's you wouldn't think the word would have been implanted, right? The seed would not have actually taken root, but God does that. He's the one who can allow that seed to take root and to bring new life and grow.
Well, and of course, for us as good on millennialists, we know that there's going to be times of great persecution. There's going to be times of actual blessing. Mm-hmm. So we see this the birth pains. There's times that women are in great pain, and then there's that time of calm. And as we get closer to the return of Christ, it's hard to tell, you know, between the times of pain and the times of calm, the contractions. And, you know, in one sense, we see that exhibited here, where there's a great time of persecution when Christian faithful go through, but that's actually alleviated a bit, and now there's this calm, so that the Christians who actually live there can actually be open about being Christians without worrying about being burned at the stake, because it's now a time of calm. In another 20, 30 years from then, another 100 years, maybe there's going to be a greater time of persecution. And of course, Bunyan himself, you know, he lived through the deposing, beheading of Charles, and the Civil War, the English Civil War, and Cromwell, and then the return of Charles. Now Charles II comes, mm-hmm. And then what happens? What does he do? He kills a bunch of the people that were against him, mm-hmm. and he was imprisoned for preaching without a license. So I mean, some of that he's witnessed in his own lifetime. He himself was in the parliamentary army, mm-hmm. Although we don't, he didn't actually see any battle, and he wasn't in there for a long time, but still, he would have known people who did go to battle.
Yeah.
And over it's, but now that he's living, especially when he writes the second book, you know, it's relatively a time of peace, and you know, maybe not as much in Scotland, but in where he is, it's relatively a time of peace. And of course, he's, you know, he's been out of prison now for 6 years, and it doesn't, you know, he's not going back. It doesn't look like he's going back. So persecution in our lives as Christians, we're going to have times where our society might be more against Christianity, mm-hmm. than at other times. And so when we're living through those times of severe persecution, one of the things that might help us to get through is knowing that, well, of course, God is in control of all this, but also this isn't, This can't end. In fact, unless Christ returns, which it would end it then, but also there's a time of calm coming. There's a time of, because why? Because that's what history has shown us.
Right, right. Doesn't mean we'll see it.
Right. No, we might not.
But our children or their children might.
Right. So
our job is to remain faithful.
Right.
To the end. So Lord willing.
So in the story, what this allows them to do, Mr. Nason, He actually goes out and he finds the Christian leaders within Vanity, and he says to them, you know, I have guests that have come, and I want you to come and meet with them, and let's speak about the things of the Lord together. More Christians are here, and let's go and I want you to meet them. And when they come, they're happy, but they're astonished, because who is it but Christian's wife and family? They didn't expect that. They thought it was just some more travelers. But they're really excited because Christian, you know, he's pretty famous now. Mm-hmm. So here's his wife and his children. And it seems like within this secondary world that Christian has become kind of like a patron saint.
Yeah, yeah. Let's make him a Paul figure instead, you know, instead of a patron saint. Yeah. He's well known for for making the journey and persevering to the end. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, he's become a celebrity pastor. No,
oh,
no, well, we don't want to say that.
Especially in Vanity, because it was. Yeah. You know, his ministry, for one thing, in Vanity, through the cage.
Yeah,
and then his
I'd prefer suffering. Paul then.
Well, Christian's become one of the guys that you read about in Hebrews 11.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a faithful witness, and his name has become known. I'm just noticing this. Nathan sends his daughter out to get these people.
Okay,
his daughter Grace,
right?
Because she comes into it a little later again, I think. Right.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And we learn about some of these saints. We got new names. We got more names. We have Mr. Contrite, Mr. Holy Man, Mr. Love Saint, Mr. Dare Not Lie, and Mr. Penitent. And so these are folks that are down in the town, I'm guessing, living in vanity, a part of the Christian church. And he calls them, and they come back. And like you said, he tells them about the strangers, the other pilgrims who are on their way to Mount Zion. And then Mr. Honesty's like he gets in there and starts asking questions.
Right, that seems to be his MO.
Yeah,
but it's funny because Mr. Honesty actually says something that I think is Bunyan that's saying it, but it's just fantastic, where he says that Christians meeting together in life on pilgrimage, mm-hmm, is like the appearing of the moon and stars to them that are sailing upon the seas. Mm-hmm. What a great way to put Christian fellowship.
Yeah, it reminds me of one of our hymns as well. Who are these like stars appearing? Is I think one of the first lines of well-known. Well, I don't know if it's well-known, but it's a hymn that I like. It was well-beloved by a former member of a church that I served in Connecticut. He would pick that all the time when we had favorite selections. Great tune, that reminded me of it. You know, you look at believers, and it's in the hymn too. It's believers that are being compared to stars. Here, it's being compared to what is it? Moon and stars. Yeah.
So they come, like you said. They sit and they talk about they talked about Christian. They talked about they're going to talk about the things of God together, but then, as seems to keep happening, Mr. Nason has two daughters, actually. Just happens to have
right number of daughters for the number of children that are left.
Christiana has two sons. So they get married.
Two more sons, yes.
Right. Two more sons. Well, two unmarried sons. Yes. Yeah, so now all four of the boys are now married.
Yeah. So what do we have? We have Mr. Nason gives, gives Grace unto Samuel. And his daughter Martha to Joseph. Mm-hmm. So Grace goes to Samuel, Martha to Joseph. There we go. All right. Another wedding.
Yeah. And almost another giant, but it's not a giant.
What? Oh.
I was waiting for another giant.
Is this our monster?
This is our monster.
Our monster.
So it's funny because, they talk about this meal. They were preparing them a meal, but it seems to be some indication that at least in what I was reading, they didn't actually get to the meal. It said that it was waiting for them. But because they were enjoying talking so much, mm-hmm, that they hadn't gotten to the meal yet. Now, at some point, I would think they did eat. But it seems like they never got there.
Yeah. We're skipping over a lot here. Right?
We are.
There's a lot of conversation between Contrite and Honesty. Honesty's doing a lot of the interaction here. And Great Heart. Feeble Mind even comes into this. So mm-hmm, he's still with them. Holy Man, I'm just sort of like looking through Penitent, Dare Not Lie. They're all being brought into the conversation. And then while they were there, there came a monster out of the woods. I mean, they're just, it's like, what are they? Where are they? It's like,
well, they're on the outskirts.
Right. They're on the outskirts.
And so the woods would be their backyard.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so a monster comes out of the woods and slew many of the people of the town. It would also carry away their children and teach them to suck its whelps. Now, no man in the town durst so much as face this monster, but all men fled when they heard of the noise of his coming.
Right. So this seems like it's a recurring thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This monster keeps coming in.
The boogie monster that's sort of in the woods, right, and just comes in, takes a kid, and comes, leaves.
Which, I mean, that in that time in Europe,
it's a part of the forest.
Absolutely, yeah, there were monsters in the forest. Mm-hmm. And So a lot of stuff that they were talking about is stuff we covered a little bit of it. We're talking about Christian and his effect upon vanity,
right?
And things.
Yeah.
So not only has it gotten better for Christians, it's interesting that as the bloodlust of the people goes down, now all of a sudden a monster comes in and terrorizes the people, almost as if their bloodlust or their hatred had kept the monster at bay before. And now this monster is coming in, and the stealing of the way the children and nourishing the children from the monsters is I think very interesting, because it we know, well, I mean, we'll just say the monster is said to be a great dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns.
Yes, it is.
And which is right out of Revelation.
Uh-huh.
So we know that, you know, here's who's this monster? It's Satan himself. And when we did our series on Revelation, and when we talked about this, we talked about the beasts and a lot of what is being referred to in Revelation when it talks about the kingdoms of this world and the beasts and the influence that Satan has on this world. It is false religion. And what's the beast coming out of the sea and the beast on land? That one is false religion and one is false philosophy. And so the fact that Satan here, the dragon, is taking the children and nourishing them, mm-hmm. is taking the next generation and is indoctrinating them in false religion and false doctrine. And this generation, their parents, had gone to that place. They went to that evil place where they, you know, tortured faithful and Christian and burned faithful at the stake. And then actually, because of the image of God within us, not because they became Christians, but because of God's image and the fact that we have an understanding of morality within even non-Christians have there is a conscience, that they've actually been afraid to do it again. They don't have that same bloodlust. And now Satan is coming in and taking the next generation and is training them up so that they can have that bloodlust again.
It's interesting. You were describing the dragon, right? And mm-hmm. or the monster, a dragon that had 7 heads and 10 horns. But there's a few more words that follow that mm-hmm. that are rather interesting as well. I'm curious to know what you make of it. It made great havoc of children, and yet it was governed by a woman. This right. monster propounded conditions to men, and such men as loved their lives more than their souls accepted these conditions. So they came under. Yeah. Now this Mr. Greatheart together, I just a little further, together with these that came to visit the pilgrims at Mr. Nason's house, entered into a covenant to go and engage this beast, if perhaps they might deliver them people of this town from the paw and mouths of this so devouring a serpent. Right. Mm-hmm. Monster, dragon, now serpent.
Right. Well, and the woman referring to the Whore of Babylon.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. I just wanted to, I mean, it's like in 2 paragraphs, you have... like 4 different references to the book of Revelation in some fashion or another.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. He's encapsulated this present age, the evil mm-hmm. of this present age in this monster.
Yeah.
And yeah, the line, where we're going to talk about that next, where the, now we're back to the generation, the parents who keep having their children taken.
Mm-hmm.
Those who cared more about their bodies than their souls obeyed.
Yeah, accepted the conditions, yeah.
It just, I mean, it should send chills up and down our spines.
It sounds like right now.
It does.
Right, I mean.
And it will be till the end.
Well, yeah, and it's always been this way, but.
It's getting worse.
It just feels very public and in a very, hostile government way, take control kind of. Totalitarian type stuff in various places in the country or in the nation.
I think we're seeing it set up in our country right now that Christianity is going to become more and more hate speech. Mm-hmm. It's going to be considered legal. At some point, there's going to be more laws that specifically target Christianity as hate speech.
Yeah, or some variation of that. Yeah, anything.
Well, and it might throw in any, you know, like, it might say, it won't say Christianity. It's going to, but it, it's going to be fashioned in such that we know, we when you stand in the pulpit and say, we are all sinners, mm-hmm. well, now you've just violated somebody's rights because you've said something negative against them, and therefore that's hate speech. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet. I tend to think it's going to be a little bit more pointed than that. Mm-hmm. If you call gay marriage wrong or sin, if you call the act of, you know, deforming your body sin to become another gender, if you refuse to use someone's pronouns, that the preferred pronouns, things like that, I think that seems to be the direction we're moving in, and it's very much like, I mean, it's a minority position
always,
but the way that he puts it here, right? The monster propounded conditions to men. It's like conditions are being sent out. You don't even have to agree with it, but because you love your lives more than your souls, we'll accept it. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like in the that's happening in the world now.
So you'll find people that aren't Christians, but are reasonable people.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't, they're not Christians, but you're a Christian, that's fine with them. Mm-hmm. And they're not, sure, you believe what you believe, but now all of a sudden they're going to be on board with.
Right. Because as they say nowadays, it's virtue signaling. Yeah. I'm the virtuous one because I'm on board with this totalitarian mentality. Right. Yeah.
So it's, I thought Bunyan's, this was just a great analogy that he's making about the influence, you know, and talking about the Whore of Babylon, you know, the society, the city, the Babylon itself, the kingdom that you're in, that is implementing these false religion and false philosophy. And how are they doing it? They're indoctrinating the children. It's just, it's like he's writing it today.
It's quite prescient.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It is. So, but these men that have come, these leaders of the church within vanity, decide, because now this beast that comes out, this monster, you know, they're thinking, you know, we actually have a mighty warrior from God here, who has been sent to us. And it's Greatheart. We're going to, wherever he goes, Greatheart's like, hey, we got an issue that we want you to help us with. And Greatheart's like, let me at him.
Yeah, where's my sword?
Yeah. And so they go out to do battle with this monster. And there's this mighty battle, and they wound the, and you know, I want you to respond to this. They wound the dragon. And they come back, and they basically they say, "We didn't kill him; he's wounded, but we know that they're mortal wounds; that he will die. This great dragon, this monster, will die from its wounds." And they're satisfied with knowing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, just the way you put it, I want to read. I always like reading the things that you want me to comment on. So it says, the monster, you must know, had his certain seasons to come out in and to make his attempts upon the children of the people of the town. Also, these seasons did these valiant worthies watch him in and did continually assault him, insomuch that in process of time he became not only wounded but lame. Also, he had not made the havoc of the townsmen's children as formerly he has done. And it is verily believed by some that this beast will certainly die of his wounds. This therefore made Mr. Greatheart and his fellows of great fame in this town, so that many of the people that wanted their taste of things, yet had a reverend esteem and respect for them. Upon this account, therefore, it was that these pilgrims got not much hurt here. True, there were some of the baser sort that could see no more than a mole, nor understand more than a beast. These had no reverence for these men, nor took they notice of their valor and adventures. Okay, two things there. So you want to comment on the sense of they wounded the beast, but it hadn't died yet, so why didn't they like continue to just go after and kill it? Well, there's a sense there that, you know, already wounded, not yet dead, you know?
Right.
you know, theological lingo of the already not yet. So the decisive battle has been waged and the decisive strike has been hit. And we know the end is near, but there are still little battles happening until that beast dies, right? And so you get that sense of what's going on there, that the beast is not quite dead, but it will die because of the wounds that have been given. And as we understand Greatheart, right? Greatheart is this valiant warrior for Christ, maybe even an ambassador of Christ on earth, bringing the sword of Christ in all of his battles, right? So, I mean, you get the sense that it's the wound is a wound that comes from Christ himself via his ambassador, via Greatheart. And it's only a matter of time before this, I was about to call him Beast, but that would be my dog in our secondary world. This monster, which is
fascinating to me that Bunyan uses the word monster instead of the word beast.
Yeah. It is because monster would be what would have been used in fairy world.
That's more
right?
story. That's
yeah,
right.
The yeah, Storyland, yeah. which, yeah. yeah. By the way, this is an excursus here.
Okay.
Did we happen to tell anyone about how things went on your?
Yeah. We talked about it.
We did talk about
Pretty
that,
sure
right?
we did. Okay. When I gave my paper.
Yeah. We talked about that last time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you talk about this aspect of Pilgrim's Progress of being a secondary world?
That was the heart of the paper.
I know. Yeah. No. I know that. But monster. This.
No, I did okay. not. I did not bring
this
up
particular language.
Monster. Okay. Because even though I do think it's very telling, but this kind of falls into a secondary category. But,
oh. Okay.
I was doing more of the overview.
There
are other places. And this is one of them where Bunyan is trying to incorporate literary story into the actual work. So
okay,
and I think this is one of the most glaring parts. But
yeah,
that,
I mean
that
the use of the word monster, as you said, interesting because it is secondary world, even because it's his world. It is Bunyan's world, monster.
Right.
But he's bringing it into his. Secondary
right.
world.
And it's funny because he talks about the monster, and then he says, and the monster is this dragon.
The dragon.
With seven heads and ten horns.
Yeah.
So he goes straight to Revelation.
Yes.
And it's like
he goes from secondary world, his world, and then Book of Revelation world.
Right.
And the figurative language of it. Anyhow, it is quite interesting.
Yeah.
But the spiritual reality that he's bringing in here is that the monster, the epitome of evil in that world is going to die.
Yeah, I think that if this had been the first book and he was using this analogy and he was talking about this, I think he probably would have called him Beast in that. But because he's kind of got this, he's already created a secondary world and he's kind of playing around with it that he uses the term monster. But if this had been the first book, I also think he would not have sent Greatheart to wound, maybe to do battle, definitely do battle and with his other men of vanity. But he would have said that either, this is conjecture. I'm just saying that based on what I think is happening in the two books, he would have said that this dragon was already wounded, and that Greatheart noticed that there was a mortal wound,
but from the cross, right?
Well,
from Christ,
Christ,
yeah.
But that although this great beast is wounded, it is still very dangerous, and so they still had a tremendous battle and fought him back because that is very true of our lives. We do fight against principalities and powers, but the Satan that we deal with, the devil that is trying to destroy the church, is a defeated devil that is wounded, that has a mortal wound, that will eventually have the final stroke given at the second coming. But so we have that, all that's true, and all that's the reality that we live in. And that's what Bunyan is trying to bring out, that this dragon does do havoc with our society. that he's trying to invoke false religion, false society. He's trying to corrupt the children. He's trying to, persuade the adults or scare the adults to conform to his law and his rules. Because they value their bodies more than they do their souls. This is all true. And mm-hmm. so, but from a story perspective, he sends Greatheart in to do battle against this monster, and Greatheart's the one that actually gives him the wound. But then he still brings it into that analogy. So what we take away from this is we have a victorious Christ who has wounded Satan, our enemy, so that we will move on. We will continue to the celestial city, and eventually Christ's kingdom is complete, and it crushes Satan's kingdom to oblivion.
All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Of course, you can find us at reformedforum.org, and you can find out all the wonderful resources there, including Reformed Academy, the other podcasts, Christ the Center, Proclaiming Christ, and so on. And I think I mentioned it once already, but you can go to mail at reformedforum.org to send us comments, questions, encouragements, and all that kind of good stuff. For the congregations that Rob and I serve, you can go to westminsteropc.org for other OP congregations within Chicagoland, which there are a number. And if you're visiting or looking for a new church, go to chicagoreformed.org. So, Rob, what's up next time?
Next time we get to talk about filthy lucre.
Filthy lucre. All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.